This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Iran's president says the settlement of safeguards issues between Tehran and the UN nuclear agency is one of the conditions to reach a deal on reviving the JCPOA. The Pentagon says it's accelerating production of high-mobility rocket systems, or HIMARS, to supply them to Ukraine. Also in the headlines, a huge relief operation underway in Pakistan in the aftermath of devastating floods. The death toll from disaster keeps rising.
Good day, everyone. Welcome to World News here in the Iranian capital. I'm your host, Badr Zajafi. Good to have you with us.
A top story this hour, Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi says an agreement on reviving the 2015 deal hinges on the settlement of safeguards issues between Tehran and the IAEA. The president says it makes no sense to speak about reviving the deal without settling those issues. The IAEA recently asked Iran to provide explanations for what are called traces of enriched uranium at some of its undeclared sites. Tehran has urged the agency to abandon politically motivated allegations, often coming from the Israeli regime. In a presser in Tehran, Raisi also called on the signatories to honor their obligations under the 2015 accord. The pact hit a snag when former U.S. President Trump walked out of it and reimposed sanctions on Iran. Tehran and other parties have been in talks to revive the deal for over a year now. Tehran is now reviewing the U.S. response to a recent EU draft proposal aimed at reviving the deal known as a Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. Okay, joining me on the phone from Tehran is Farshid Bagharian. He's a political analyst. Good to have you with us, Mr. Bagharian. So let's talk about this, the remaining issues between Iran and the IAEA as regard to safeguard agreement. President Raisi saying, as you just heard, that it makes no sense to talk about reaching an agreement on reviving the JCPOA without first settling those issues that he believes are impacted and kind of pushed by the Tel Aviv regime and its political in nature. Sure.
The fact is not the atomic agency. The fact is the trust and commitment afterward of the signing any agreement. Because we know, after the withdrawal of the Mr. Trump by tearing out the agreement, we cannot trust anymore the United States, maybe some other part of agreement. So the fact is right now, Iranian, not only the prime, not only the presidency, the rule of Iran, needs commitment and the trust and the guarantee for not issuing any other condition or withdrawing anymore, because we cannot accept any other damages that caused by the new withdrawal. The fact is right now, they are trying to know more about our activities in this field. Because if you see this, Israel is trying to put some impact and more influences on the decision of Mr. Biden right now. And afterwards, the United States is right now is trying to tie the agreement and the afterward agreement to the Congress. You know, after November, the new election, mid-election of the Congress, the power of the Republicans definitely will be more than right now. Nobody's talking about that. So they are fearing to losing the power, and they not the implementation of this any sign on an agreement. So Iran knows this very well right now, because in the November, everything is going to be changed in United States legislation. And after that, the Mr. Biden will face maybe impeachment. And one of the subjects for impeachment would be these agreements. So right now, if you see the table that we are talking about, the Joint Comprehensive Action, is Iran against, not plus, against Russia, China, United States, England, and Europe. So we are facing three different types of the order. The first order is Anglo-Saxon order. I mean, the tie between the United States and England. The other order is European Union, and the rest of the order is Eurasia or maybe East order. So this is three orders that they are conflicting themselves. And Iran is right now is not obliged to sacrifice itself during the clash of these three orders. The fact is, we need commitment. And none of these, the players on the other side of the table is not trying to give any commitment and any guarantee to us. Okay. Yeah.
All right. Thanks for that, Farshid Balghari, and political expert who joined me on the phone from the Iranian city of Karaj. It's news review time. The United States is accelerating production of high-mobility rocket systems, HIMARS, to supply them to Ukraine to help it fight Russia, and that according to a senior Pentagon official. William LaPlante made the announcement after visiting Lockheed Martin, a key U.S. arms manufacturing company. He said Washington's goal is to help Ukraine defend itself against the Russian aggression. Lockheed Martin tweeted that it takes pride in delivering products that enable America's mission success. On Wednesday, President Joe Biden also announced that he is sending an additional $3 billion in military aid to Kyiv. The latest package pushes the total amount of military assistance Washington has offered to Kyiv since February to nearly $14 billion. Moscow has repeatedly warned that arming of Ukraine adds fuel to the fire and prolongs the war. Now, to get some insight, let's invite a couple of guests. Barry Grossman is a political analyst. He's in Bali, Indonesia. Manuel Pasrai, president of Asia Institute in Seoul. Welcome to the show, gentlemen. So, Barry, adding fuel to the fire and prolonging the war, is this the goal that the U.S. is pursuing, as the Kremlin is claiming?
Well, I think it's been clear from the beginning the U.S. has a very big investment in keeping the conflict going in the Ukraine and accelerating the conflict. All as part of its long-range strategy or tactic of isolating Russia. This is a war which the Ukraine cannot win. It's a bit like the mouse that roared. And while with military aid to the tune of countless billions from Atlantic world countries, it can slow the process of losing this conflict down, it can't win. And, of course, the Atlantic world's man in Kyiv is completely opposed to any kind of a political resolution, bearing in mind that when the failing Soviet Union, soon to be Russia, agreed to grant independence to the Ukraine, it did so on the basis of the Ukraine signing an agreement committing to being a neutral party. And of course, it's been anything but neutral in recent years as the U.S. agenda plays out, which first gave us the maiden protests and the civil unrest that followed, and eventually civic unrest throughout the eastern provinces where they're predominantly populated by ethnic Russians. So this particular president of the Ukraine, apart from being corrupt, is very committed to pushing a U.S. agenda, which is to keep this conflict alive, this military conflict, at the expense of Ukrainians. I don't think short-range missiles are going to make a great deal of difference in terms of the eventual outcome of this war, even a great deal of tactical difference in the short term, because whatever the Ukraine can do with U.S., British, and wider Atlantic world help, the Russians are more than capable of doing with their own armor.
Right. Okay. Now, Emmanuel, U.S. Has so far, as I just mentioned, contributed $14 billion, worth of military armament to Kyiv, and now they looks like that they're adamant to keep doing that. Okay, we see Lockheed Martin and other arms, people are in the arms business. They are making big bucks. No, right. The U.S. is benefiting from this, and especially arms manufacturers. What about European countries? Are they not losing? Look at the energy prices, cost of living in the U.K. and others.
Well, obviously, for the average person in Europe, or for that matter, in the Ukraine, things are quite severe in terms of the impact, not just in energy, but in food prices. Ukraine itself is a major food producer, and in some ways, all these multinational corporations were most interested, actually, in the food production in Ukraine. And the situation is not getting better. Europe is reaching a state it hasn't seen, really, in some ways, since the 1950s. And that's a global impact. In the Ukraine specifically, the impact has been devastating. And there, as you noted, there's no end in sight. And for all we can see, Lockheed Martin is gung-ho about increasing conflict, selling more weapons, and trying to engage Russia in what could potentially be a world war or a nuclear war.
Okay, thank you so much for your comments. Bera Grossman in Indonesia and Emmanuel Pasraj in Seoul. Welcome back. Let's move on with the rest of this newscast. The International Atomic Energy Agency chief is leading a delegation to Ukraine to inspect the Zaporizhzhia plant that's now in control of Russian forces. In a Twitter post, Rafael Grossi said that the IAEA support and assistance mission would arrive at Europe's largest nuclear power plant later this week. He also posted a photo showing him and a team of 13 people on their way to Ukraine. Grossi has for months been asking for permission, warning of a nuclear disaster risk amid reports of repeated shelling of the plant. The Zaporizhzhia site was taken by Russians shortly after they launched an offensive in Ukraine in late February. Moscow and Kiev have traded blame for shelling around the complex. In a UN Security Council meeting last week, Russian envoy confirmed an IAEA mission will visit the site. He said that Moscow would extend maximum support possible to resolve all organizational issues. Now, huge relief operations underway in Pakistan following rain-triggered floods that devastated the whole country last week. The government already declared national emergency. It deployed the army to help in rescue and aid efforts. Army choppers are struggling to pick people from the mountains north to safety. National Disaster Management Authority has reported 28 more deaths, pushing the figure to more than 1,060 since June. Last week, historic rains devastated four main provinces, with Balochistan being the hardest hit. The floods have destroyed more than 2 million acres of crops, thousands of kilometers of roads, and dozens of bridges. Some 33 million people have been affected. Officials say that this year's floods are the worst on record, and the government has appealed for international help to deal with the disaster. Gas and electricity prices have risen to historic highs in Italy. Businesses complaining energy bills have gone up 10 times compared to the year before. Max Civoli is reporting from Rome, saying that thousands of Italian businesses risk going bankrupt in the coming months.
Italy's energy crisis keeps getting more worrying by the day as wholesale gas prices have surged to skyrocketing levels. Italy, like most of its European neighbors, has reviewed its energy strategy following the start of the war in Ukraine and the sanctions against Russia, Rome's largest gas supplier, accounting for over 40% of imports. In an attempt to diversify its gas supplies, Rome has sealed new deals with Algeria and has planned the construction of new gas infrastructures, a move that includes buying more LNG and setting up new regasification plants.
Italy relies on fossil gas for 40% of its electricity production, with the consequence that electricity costs have gone crazy. Our industrial system relies very much on gas-produced electricity. The risk is that the products of our steelmakers and of our manufacturers will soon be out of the market.
Italy's industrial lobby Confindustria has warned of the risk of widespread company failures if energy prices keep surging this way. Confindustria is calling on the government to create a plan for rationing gas and to provide new subsidies to shield manufacturers. Gas prices have recently climbed to over 320 euros per megawatt hour, three times the price recorded at the beginning of July, and about 1,000% more compared to the same period a year ago. Businesses have slammed the rate as unsustainable, while consumer groups have described it as an emergency.
The impact on the average Italian will be dramatic. I expect a profound reshape of our lives and energy future.
In less than a month, Italy will return to the polls, with a large number of electors expected to skip the vote. According to latest polls, 16 million Italians, accounting for 35% of Italy's 51 million voters, will not cast their ballot as, quote, the trust in politician is wearing thin. Max Civili, Rome.
Now to the UK, children are getting ready to go back to classrooms. Teachers and charities warning that widespread hunger will be, quote, the single biggest challenge facing schools. It's led to calls for the government to introduce universal free school meals. Charities are angry that the threshold for free school meals has not changed since 2018, despite soaring inflation. According to charity group, 800,000 children living in poverty in England miss out on free school meals, despite cost of living struggles of families. And that number is expected to rise. Schools are also facing other challenges. The president of the National Association of Head Teachers says that some schools may have problems to keep the lights on. The new revelation comes amid reports that inflation in the UK is already at a four-year high of more than 10%. Staying with the UK, the largest warship breaks down en route to the US after departing from Portsmouth in southern England. The HMS Prince of Wales, one of the Royal Navy's two aircraft carriers, remains anchored off the Isle of Wight in the south coast of England. An investigation for emerging mechanical issues is carried out. The warship had set sail for the US, Canada, and the Caribbean, where it would operate fifth-generation F-35 stealth fighter jets, as well as drones. Prior to departure and breakdown, UK Navy officials said that the mission would push boundaries of UK carrier operations and reinforce working relationship with the US. The HMS Prince of Wales was inaugurated in 2021 in the city of Portsmouth. Well, breaking news for you. Iraqi cleric Muqtada al-Sadr says that he's quitting politics forever. Well, that's news, because his supporters were storming into parliament premises, setting up tents there, asking, they were protesting the results of the election, and the Sadr's, of course, party got majority seats, but Sadr was not able to form a government in Iraq. And now we have the latest from him saying that he's quitting politics forever. And, of course, after he also came to judiciary said that's beyond our scope of activities to judge about that.
That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
economic divide.
Europe's energy crisis is far from over, but Europe has another big worry to deal with, and that is the upcoming winter, when it's predicted to be extremely cold. How will its citizens deal with not only a high energy cost, but energy rationing? The term heat or eat is no joke when it comes to the European state of affairs on top of inflation. Hi, I'm Kavit Halfway. Welcome to Economic Divide. In this program, we will take a look at Europe's energy crunch. High gas bills, one of the outcomes, Europe to ration energy, something that is now real. Tough winter is projected ahead. Next up, we will take a look at Europe's cost of living crisis. We've covered this before in this program, worth reviewing again when you take a look at things like high inflation and also low purchasing power as a result of high inflation, amongst other prices that is biting into the pocketbook of Europeans. And finally, EU politicians, what are they doing? Well, in essence, they are sacrificing their own citizens. They're not pushing for diplomacy when it comes to the Ukraine conflict. And as a result, an economic crisis has unfolded for them.
As the crisis between Russia and the West heats up, fears are growing in Europe of a gloomy winter. There are now concerns that Russia could turn the gas tap off to Europe. Prices are already high in Europe and the UK.
There is potentially a double parallel between Britain today and Britain in 1973 and thereabouts, in that the inflation which took off in Britain in 1973 and stayed high for the rest of the decade was the first impulse towards inflation was a combination of domestic forces because of global energy crisis.
Households in Germany will have to pay almost 500 euros more a year for gas.
There is no relief for Europe and its citizens when it comes to their economic state of affairs. They simply can't keep up or do anything about their money losing its value at this point in time. And that is very evident when you take a look at some online posts on this matter. And then with winter coming, things are looking pretty bad for them. Our first online post, winter in Europe may be springtime for Putin. Taking a look at this entry, we go into the source where it says winter in Europe may be springtime for Putin. Russia's energy war deploys high prices to promote social turmoil and to empower populist parties. Next up, Europe seems to be getting exactly what the U.S. thought Russia was getting, an economic squeeze so bad that it topples leaders. Ouch, that hurts. Then German and French electricity are at record highs of 532 euros per megawatt hour for Germany and 690 euros per megawatt hour for France. Europe on the verge of an energy crisis, and it will be a very cold winter for the region. Then finally, natural gas is being stored and demand is being curbed, but it's far too early to call an end to Europe's fears of a cold, dark winter plagued by blackouts. Now, welcome to Europe's Dark Cold Winter, Elements by Julian Lee, in which it says replenishing storage and reducing demand still may not be enough. So obviously all the online posts that we just reviewed show how bad Europe is going to do and their citizens come winter. Okay, let's bring in our guests for this segment of the Q&A. Our first guest is Malachi Steenson. He's a lawyer and political activist. Malachi Steenson, welcome to Economic Divide. Taking a look at Europeans, they are looking at a really tough winter ahead, of which then the news of gas rationing and energy rationing in particular is what they have announced. And this has actually gone into effect. The shortage in energy to have affected deeply, for example, the UK, where electric bills have tripled. When you take a look at rationing, that really has a shocking ring to it. And, of course, the immediate question is when that happens, how will that affect the economy of countries like Germany and the UK?
Well, I mean,
I think if we look particularly at Ireland, we're seeing the very same thing, where we're seeing, you know, huge increases in both electricity, gas and oil prices. And I think that the oil companies and the utility companies are using the Ukrainian crisis in order to jack up prices to consumers and to increase profits. I mean, at one hand, they're telling us that the price of these commodities is increasing. Yet at the same time as they increase the price to consumers, their profits are going up by huge margins. So it seems to me there's a certain amount of price gouging in the whole business. I think that the West and the EU in particular are using the Ukrainian crisis in order to bring in further controls on population. I mean, again, if you look at Ireland, we're told we're going to have energy blackouts in the next, during the next winter. But at the same time, our economic policy is geared towards bringing in, for instance, more data centres, which are huge users of electricity in particular, huge users of water resources. And there's no reluctance to say, well, if we're going to be short of electricity and power, then we shouldn't be bringing in these big consumers.
Okay, let me introduce our next guest. Karel Veres Kent joins us. Karel is the VP of the French party by the name of Solidarity and Progress, or Progrès, as they say in French. Karel, welcome to Economic Divide. Europe is forecast to begin this winter with historically low amounts of diesel. And my focus on this question is diesel that powers large parts of the economy in European countries, used for cars, trucks, etc. Now, when you take a look at the way that this actually obviously is one of the components behind the way that the economy and its wheel turn, how will this be supplied if the supplies of diesel are at their lowest this time of the year when it continued from the year 2008?
Well, on the gas situation, there are deals with Azerbaijan, Norway, and Algeria. On the oil, it's probably more complicated because there are all kinds of tricks which are being used by various countries to counter the sanctions. For example, India is buying a lot of Russian oil, which is very cheap, with special discounts, like China also. But India eventually could sell it to other partners in other countries, which then in turn can sell it to the US and to Europe. So everything depends to what degree, you know, the police, the media police and the financial police of the institutions connected to the central banks, will they really impose their policies? But you're absolutely right that diesel is a very clean and cheap energy and efficient energy. And taking it down will only lower the productivity, and then lower productivity means increasing chances of recession, depression, and bankruptcy.
It's time now for our InfoNews section of the program, where we bring you news with an economic flavor from around the world. Our first item is something to do with kids, the cost of kids. That's right, that has made news, the price of parenthood in the age of inflation. Now, this particular one is for the U.S., where it costs at least $300,000 per kid to raise them. Now, what have they done to come up with that figure? They have factored in the cost of inflation, where it said that a child costs more than a pretty penny for the average American. That price used to be roughly around $200,000 to $250,000. So obviously there was a huge increase when it comes to the cost of kids and raising them. Next up, something that the EU doesn't want to hear about. It's EU bankruptcies from businesses. More EU firms are facing that bleak situation. According to Eurostat, the number of petitions for insolvency has grown for a fourth consecutive quarter. Bankruptcy declarations has increased by 2.2% in the April to June period for the year 2022. Another blow to the European economy. And the next up, a piece of news that came out regarding Canada and Canadian worker abuse, where you have a fight that has ramped up to prevent Canadian companies from abusing these workers abroad. Canadian companies have been accused of being complicit in alleged rights abuses and environmental harms. Now, that obviously has to deal with companies that deal with minerals or resources of that nature. And our final look goes to Dubai and the inflation in there. Consumer prices there have rocketed to its highest after years of actual deflation. Maybe you didn't know, but just 3 years ago, Dubai was experiencing the sharpest deflation in the region, peaking at 3.9% annually in February of 2019. So it shows at this point how that has rebounded, it's gone the opposite way to towards inflation. Those were the topics we picked. Hope you liked them. If you have any particular piece of news that you'd like to share with us from where you are at, please do send them to us.
You're listening to Economic Divide. The series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
Time now for an in-depth section of the program. The energy crisis in Europe is real. Many Europeans will not be able to afford their heating bill this winter. And that's going to have severe consequences, unintended ones, for European officials and their countries. Social unrest not that far off. Some have speculated that is what's going to happen. Well, let's take a look at some of the reasons why something like that may occur. Now, electricity prices for the year 2021, Spain and Portugal, 411% increase. I mean, that's a lot, isn't it, for countries to experience that much of an increase. Greece has experienced a 343% increase in their electricity wholesale prices. And also France, which comes in at 336%. A lot. And also, we're looking at other countries that maybe we didn't have time to put here. Last one here, Italy. This has come in at 318%. And this is directly coming from the European Commission in terms of the figures and the increase that you see over here. Now, as energy prices surge, while wages remain unchanged, or maybe just a slight increase, some are living from salary to salary based on what has occurred. And they're being forced to actually decide whether to spend their limited funds on keeping the lights on in their homes or filling the fridge. This is where the term heat or eat has become a catchword for Europeans. That's the stark reality that they're facing. All right, next, energy ministers. Well, they had to do something. They've reached a deal on an EU-wide reduction in gas, which is something they came up with, 15% across the board. They said this first phase will be voluntary based on coordination or fuel switching, temperature limits, and information campaigns. But we have to wait and see whether that can actually be a blanket application for all European countries. That's key over there. Next up, this is something that's really incredible. Now, they're facing an energy crisis, okay? So what they're going to do, they are actually announced that they're prepared to drive up the cost of everyone's heating bills. How is that going to happen? Well, they're going to secure their supply of natural gas for the upcoming winter. But according to the European Union officials, whatever the world market can pay for a tanker transporting a supercooled form of, like, fossil fuel across international waters, Europe will be willing to top it. That's right. So whatever price is out there, they said this formally, made the announcement, we're going to pay a higher price. So there you have it. You have the citizens of these countries that are going to pay higher for that. Let's bring back Malachi Stinson, who's a lawyer and political activist, to see what he thinks about this. Malachi Stinson, welcome back. The EU has agreed to ration gas. That's one of the things that it said it will do. But some countries obviously have put up a fight because every country has its own particular needs when it comes to energy. And, of course, these energy sanctions against Russia are biting their economies. How fragile is this unity against Russia, do you think, at this point, as the economies are tanking and people are suffering?
At the same time, we're telling people, because of climate change and the other the agenda that they're using there to control people, we're saying that you must switch to electric cars. And at the same time, we're telling people, well, you're going to have electrical shortages. You're not going to be able to charge your car. So you're going to be, just like they used COVID to ensure that people were brought under a communist-type control in their countries, where they were afraid to go out the doors, where they were told, you know, that Armageddon was coming and the world was about to end. We're told the same with climate change. And, you know, as Michael O'Leary, the CEO of Ryanair, said the other day, that these people are telling us, for instance, what the temperature would be in 100 years, and they can't tell us what next Tuesday's weather would be like. So it seems to me to be a whole agenda being pursued, which is not in the interest of the ordinary consumer, and it's not in the interest of the ordinary member of the public. It's a policy that's being pursued, on one hand, to create and move capital into fewer and fewer hands, and also at the same time to move power into this European federal state almost, and into the powers of unelected bureaucrats.
Okay, let's see what Karel Veresken thinks. He's the VP of the French party Solidarity and Progress, who rejoins us. Karel, welcome back. A month ago, we saw how Europe was facing an energy rationing scheme, which it says it's going to enact as the tough winter, which has been predicted is going to be tough, is looming. You're looking at the shortage that has really catapulted gas prices and energy prices into a whole nother level, like in the UK, where it's tripled. Germany is also affected very severely. What effects will this rationing, when it really goes into full-fledged execution, have on the economy of these countries?
Well, it's a fast trip to disaster, because it's there is an alignment of several planets which are predicting that this will lead us to total collapse. First of all, for the European economy, it means losing the market in Russia, which for some factors in some areas is very important. Secondly, we're losing the arrival of raw materials for the production. Three, the higher cost of energy, because we'll bring down productivity. The model of the reconstruction of Europe after the war is to have cheap energy and invested in highly productive industry and agriculture. For example, people in Germany talk about the end of the German model, because they will not have the cheap energy to build machines they can export and sell for high prices. Then on top of this, we have the drought, which is slowing down our nuclear power plants, which cannot be cooled, notably in France. But also it is impacting transport, like the Danube and the Rhine River. The Rhine is now below 40 centimeters, which means a lot of shipping inland, waterways cannot really function.
The industrial Northwest Europe is likely to face diesel shortages this winter. Diesel power covers large parts of the economy. Diesel shortages, along with falling levels of heating oil, could further weaken the economy, and to prompt more protests across the continent. Gas rationings and possible shutdowns could potentially trigger social unrest and dissatisfaction among the poorer sections of European societies. Strikes have already erupted in several countries, including the UK, Belgium, and Spain. Governments are aware that people are struggling, and they know that things will get worse in the coming months.
I think our problem now is a lack of knowledge. We don't have anybody around in politics who can remember what it was like with inflation. Certainly not in office, and indeed many of them not at all, because you know, this is quite a young generation of politicians we have up now. So I think there's a danger in possibly in the other direction. The people are slightly lost.
We have told you about Europe's energy problem, but perhaps no country in Europe is facing an energy crisis like Germany. Let us count the reason why. The scale of the problem for Germany is so big that this headline reads a doomsday scenario. According to Bloomberg, Germany is at a risk of deindustrialization. It states that soaring power prices may trigger an exodus of factories from the country. Prices for gas and electricity in Germany have reportedly more than doubled in the past 2 months. There's another point that is not covered when it comes to Germany, and that is how they have moved to green energy from a long time ago under a program called Energiewende. Energiewende gained legislative support in 2010, and Germany spent over 202 billion euros on renewable energy projects from 2013 to 2020. Since 2010, the share of German electricity generation that has come from solar and wind power has risen from 8% to 31%. Now Germany may reopen its coal plants that it had shut down. They have no choice in order to safeguard their economy and national security. Don't forget, coal is the dirtiest source of electricity. Nevertheless, Germany has told its citizens that they have to face the stark truth when it comes to energy use. The German government has urged its citizens to lower energy use. They require citizens to turn down their air conditioners and use less hot water. Let's end this segment by bringing up another point that is the following. What are the safest and cleanest sources of energy? Fossil fuels are the dirtiest and most dangerous energy sources, while nuclear and modern renewable energy sources are vastly safer and cleaner. The differences are huge. So it is quite hypocritical of Western governments to tell Iran to stop its civilian use of nuclear energy. That does it for this segment. Hope you found it useful.
When European countries began confronting Russia after Russia's special military operation against Ukraine, did they really know what they were getting themselves into? I mean, first of all, let's be clear, I'm not trying to justify the war or the death of civilians. But as the war dragged on, did the Europeans really want to continue down this path, one in which they are now facing things like lack of food, inflation, or high energy costs? Even now, do they want a political solution for the sake of at least not ruining their economies, let alone their citizens? Or are they following the U.S. diktats while risking a potential either Third World War or, worse yet, a nuclear catastrophe? These are key questions that the European officials need to deal with. We'll find out, hopefully sooner than later, what they decide. That does it for this edition of the program. It was great having you with us. From Mikhail Takhle and team, looking forward to seeing you next week.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents. For humanity. Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi.
A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytan ar-rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Brothers and sisters, dear listeners, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to IRIB English Radio. And you are listening to the program For Humanity. We are looking at human beings in the Quran, and how does Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala looks at me and you. So we made it very clear in the previous episodes that sometimes we are looked at in a good light, sometimes we are looked at in a dark light. Depends on the action that we do. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, again, when He looks at humans, human beings, we are a multi-dimensional creatures, right? So when we were looking at human beings, we said, okay, they have the aspect of the physical aspect and they have the material aspect to them. So human beings are a material and spiritual beings who share many common aspects with other animals, obviously, you know, being human. But at the same time, we are separated from other animals and creatures by a great distance in terms of some basic conceptual distinctions, such as offering human beings, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala offers us a different dimension, and we kind of almost have each one of us has a separate manifestation in the whole of existence, such as distinctions occur in three different areas. If we want to dissect this human being in the Quran, and we wanted to separate him from, obviously, other creatures. One, we have recognition of the self and the world. We are very conscious of that. We are very aware of that. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has given us this ability that we can recognize things around us and the world itself and our own selves. We have desire which governs the human being. Without desire, we will die. We will cease to exist, because if I haven't got the desire to eat or sleep or interact with the opposite gender, then obviously we will fail. Three, the degree to which the human being is influenced by such desires and the ability to choose. So also, not only having desires, but how much of these desires influence who I am, who I will become, and obviously my ability to choose it or not to choose it, to go for it or not to go for it. Obviously, in whatever direction I go, there is a consequence that follows. So as far as the recognition of the world is concerned, the physical senses serve animal as a mean of awareness of the world, correct? Human beings share this quality with other creatures. Although in some cases, or certain cases, animals, they would have superiority in that over us. So for example, their eyesight is much more. They can see further, they can see in the dark, they can see more than I and you can see. The recognition that senses offer human being and other animals is superficial. It does not go deeply into the nature and essence of things or the logical relationship amongst them. So when an animal looks at something, even though they are superior in terms of eye and sight, the stronger, sharper, and what have you, they have night vision. But they do not have the eyes that I see. When I see something, I decode it. I know what it is. I know what it means. An animal does not know what it is. They don't know what they're seeing. They're seeing it, but they have no clue what they're seeing. So you can see there's a huge difference between the way I view the world through the senses which animals share with me and how they view it. Now, hold that thought and let's take a short break, and then we will come back.
Dear listeners, you are listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program For Humanity. Now, human beings, however, we're still talking about the multi-dimensions of the human being. Human beings, however, their existence, it's very complicated and sophisticated in terms of their own creation, right? So, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, when He brings them to an animal, even like we said, we share most of our senses, that the sight, the touch, the hearing, and the taste, we share it with the animals, obviously. But what we have is something that they lack. We have the critical thinking that accompanies these senses. So if I touch, I can decide what I'm touching, I can interact with what I'm touching, and also I can create feelings to what I'm touching. So sometimes you touch something and you feel sad, or you feel happy, or you feel excited just based on how you touch a thing. Where animals, they are deprived of such a thing. When it comes to my taste as well, I get to enjoy what I'm tasting. When it comes to hearing, I understand what I'm hearing. And I get to also enjoy what I'm hearing. Same thing with the eyesight. These are what makes the human being more mysterious and more dimensional than other creatures that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has created. So human beings discover basic laws of the world and get a general view of it through thinking, by obviously utilizing the senses that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has provided me and you with. They employ, obviously human beings, not animals, different aspects of the existence of the world to achieve their purpose, which makes us very smart creatures that will use everything around us to reach our goals and purposes. And, you know, some people, they see their perfection in money, so they would use everything to seek that money. Some people see their perfection in pleasing Allah, and they would do that as well. So as we pointed out before, this potential belongs to the human beings only, to either be fully perfect or fully condemned. Other animals, other creatures of Allah do not have that choice. All right. In fact, the mechanism of rational recognition is one of the most complex mechanisms of human existence. That the ability to think and recognize things. Okay, so this is not in words, in terms of words, it seems to be very easy to comprehend. In terms of the actual existence of rationality and how human beings think and work, is something that science and scientists until today, they don't know what is it and where is it that makes a human being think and becomes conscious. Is it neutrons in the brain, brain calculations? Is it, what is it? They still don't know. And that's the beauty of the creation of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in terms of human beings. Now, we will leave this discussion here and we will continue this topic in episodes to come. Until then, stay with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa alihi. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa alihi.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.